What's in your bag?
What's in the bag?
Yeah, what's in the bag?
The bag, bitch.
My friend's got a bag full of explosives.
We must find the bag.
I don't know what's in the bag.
What's in the bag?
You want to see what's in my bag?
Welcome back to What's in the Bag. I'm Matt, and we have a little bit of a different setup today. We have two guests today. A bit of a collective here. If you guys wouldn't mind, go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Eddie.
And I'm Danny.
Eddie and Danny. Beautiful. Off the bat, do you guys usually collaborate like as a duo, or is this something like it's been more recent that you have like a different project that you guys are here together for?
Yeah, it's recent. We did collaboration for this one project, Los Lowriders.
Okay.
And then we kind of like started to work on this together.
Gotcha. If you don't mind, how did that kind of come about? How did that, you know, develop? How did you guys meet each other?
I think it was, we met during the pandemic at the old clubhouse. And then I think, it was one of those meetings, you know, like drinking beers, getting drunk, and then talking about photography and all that stuff. And I think at some point I had this idea, because I always was intrigued about the lowrider community overall and the cars.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to do something with them. And I talked to Danny about it. And then I think we just figured that we shouldn't be taking photos of the cars, because that's what everyone does. And it's just like, gotcha. We've seen cars 1,000 times. We've seen those cars 1,000 times. So it was kind of like, so how can we give it a twist? So we kind of like talked through it. And then I did a project years ago in New York where I had like a white backdrop and we put the people in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what if we do something like this with the people? We go to the events and we take kind of like those photos. And then Danny agreed, and then we just went and we just, you know, we decided to shoot it. And then we kind of like gave it a little bit of a twist because we wanted to get the rawness with it. So we started to do it all in film.
Gotcha.
Did I miss anything?
No, you good.
That was everything. Nothing to add. Okay, beautiful. Gotcha. So, you guys are here as a collective for like Los Lowriders, we'll kind of get more into like what that project looks like later.
Yeah.
But for now, just like off the bat, like as photographers, like what this entire podcast is called, What's in the Bag. So this is all based around what's in your guys's bag when you go on a shoot. What are we bringing? So first off, what type of bag do you guys use?
Well, I carry usually it's made by Chrome.
Okay.
So that one, that's like my main bag.
Gotcha.
But when we go out shooting, like for the lowrider stuff, we can't, you know, walk around with a giant bag.
Yeah.
So I have a sling bag. I don't remember the brand, but it's a little sling bag.
Gotcha.
Camera, film, Nikon lens.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Super simple.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned that, you shoot with film. So like at the very least, you're bringing along everything for that.
Yeah. I have no idea what it is. It's like a backpack where you can put in, you know, like the cameras and the lenses, all that stuff.
Gotcha.
That's what I mostly use when I just travel. But if I go to like the lowriders, because it's basically all you need is one camera.
Yeah.
Because it's all shot in film. So you don't have to, you know, move cameras and change cameras. So it's just one camera, one lens. And we just walk around with it.
Gotcha. So what type of camera is in this bag? Yeah, we can either go like one and then the other, and then
I have a Mark IV, Canon Mark IV. Then I have a Leica MP two hundred something.
Okay.
I think it's one of those. And then I have, for the lowriders, I have a Canon EOS I.
Gotcha.
For my bag, I do mostly 100% Nikon.
Okay.
So for digital, I do the Nikon D750. And then for the lowriders project, since on film, I use the Nikon F100.
Okay, beautiful. So we've got a full spectrum of cameras when we're going out to shoot these.
Yeah.
Gotcha, beautiful. And how long have you had these? Are these like some of your guys' like tried and trues? Like, have you had these for a while? Or are these kind of more specifically for the project that you guys have been working on recently?
For me, the F100, this is like my third body.
Okay.
On that one. So I shoot them into the ground. And I've been shooting those cameras for like 6-7 years.
Gotcha. So you went through 3 cameras in 6 years?
Yeah, those cameras.
Well, bodies.
Yeah, yeah, bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Because it's Nikon and it's shit. I have the Leica. I've had that for like, what is it now? Maybe like 10 years-ish.
Okay.
Something like that. The Mark IV I've had for maybe like 5 years, 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
And then the EOS I, actually my brother gave that one to me, or, you know, gave it to me to this project.
Mm-hmm.
And he got it from another photographer. So that one is, I mean, it's what, I think it's like from 98, I would assume.
Okay,
so
wow.
That one is old. I think it's the last model that they made.
Okay, gotcha.
So yeah, it's an old one.
So what do we like about these cameras? So like the cameras that you have, you know, obviously they're not Nikon, probably, you know, for better or for worse. I'm not going to take a side. But what's the benefit of these? Like, what do you enjoy about them?
I like, especially for like the DSLRs, the Leica as well. Actually, even the EOS One, like the SLR. I like that there's no, you know, like you look through and there's no thousand things blinking around and mm-hmm. making your life, you know, miserable, because it's too many things.
Yeah, it stresses you out.
It stresses me out, yeah, for sure. Same. Like it, like we had, I think like it was like for cameras and kits, where we kind of like got the Sony cameras and we had to set them up and whatever. I was freaking the fuck out. I was like, where is this? Where, like, because I'm used to kind of like make it all manual.
Yeah, very manual.
And
yeah,
just shoot and not have all the things blinking around.
100%.
And it freaked me out, so I just gave it away. I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
But that's what I like about those. And it's very intuitive, right? Like the Canon is very intuitive, and the Leica specifically, that one, there's nothing crazy you can do with it. Like you have to, you know, focus by hand, and you have two things you can do with it pretty much. So there's a understanding you need to have to use that camera.
Yeah.
And that to me is super, you know, it's relaxing. It's nice because I can focus on everything else, and I can focus on the subject. I can focus on what I'm doing, where I'm going, what I'm shooting. And I don't have to think, you know, like, what is this line over here and this one, and is it whatever? So yeah, that's what I like. Yeah.
Yeah. I went through the exact same thing. In January, I bought my first Sony. And I had, before that, I'd been shooting film, and I shot on an old, Canon 50D. And that was a whole experience that I had that I'd really shot up into that point. And I got a Sony, and at the entire like display screen is just covered in like the little icons. And like, I remember like when I first started shooting with it, it was so overwhelming, because I was like, I don't even know what most of these mean. I was like, I just like cleared them all away. And then like, as I've gotten more used to it, it's like, I get it now. But it took me like a couple months of shooting with it to even like understand what was going on, because it's stressful. Yeah. All right, Mr. Nikon, what's the benefit of it? Yeah.
Benefit.
Or what do you enjoy about it? It doesn't have to be better than anything else.
Benefit is the lenses. I can use lenses from the 60s on my brand, like on a new digital camera.
That is pretty clutch, yeah.
So I can use my pro lenses from digital and transfer them over to film. So I can do all that. I've been using it forever. So like I can shoot in the dark. I know where everything is.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's like, it's second nature almost to just like, you know, pick up one of those and I know where everything is. And
yeah, 100%. Are these, so with these cameras, do you guys see these as like the best cameras for what you guys are doing? Or if there was an option for like a better camera, is there like something that you can like aspire to? Or are these like the ones that you've got it locked in? Like we're shooting these portraits, we're shooting these events. This is what we got, and this is why we love it.
I mean, ideally we would go medium format.
Okay, 100%.
But we shoot the way we shoot a lot.
Yeah.
So it has to medium format. That's the handicap. You know?
Yeah.
We can't be changing film every 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So the benefit of shooting 35 is that we can, you know, shoot 36 photos and kind
of. So it does at the end of the day cater to what you are shooting.
Yeah.
If there was an ability to shoot medium format, a little bit more rapid fire, maybe, but
especially when you're at these events, you don't have, you know, the luxury of, you know, sitting there with them for an hour and, you know, like, hey, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. So it's like you get a couple minutes with them and, you know, you pose them, you get them ready, you pop the shots, and then, you know, you have to move on.
Absolutely.
So for what we're doing right now, I mean, in the future, if we do more of a studio setting with some of these people, then, yeah, ideally it would be, you know, medium format. But right now, I think 35 and the gear that we're using kind of fits it pretty well.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Beautiful. All right. So we've gone through, we've kind of gone through the cameras. We've gone through the little like micro bags that we have, especially on these shoots. Is there anything that you have in there that's like not camera forward? You know, like, you know, we've talked about cameras and the film and stuff like that, but in regards to like the other equipment that you bring with you, you know, whether it's snacks, whether it's a pocket knife, whether it's something like that, like what are the essentials that we're going through in this bag? We or are you just purists? You're just out there raw dogging with the cameras.
Giant 6x6 white backdrop.
Okay.
To all these events.
Okay.
And that's like the thing that sticks out the most.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. If I don't ask you guys about this now, it's just going to be sitting in the back of my head for the rest of it. I get like very much like Richard Avedon, like vibes from what you guys have been describing. And I looked at a little bit of your guys' work before. I didn't put two and two together about the white backdrop, but that I forget what that project was called, but the one where he went across America, he has that iconic beekeeper photo, stuff like that. Is that something that you have kind of like thought about? Is he someone that like kind of inspired that? Or is it just like what you're trying to isolate exactly what you're trying
well,
to take
Well, yeah, two things. Definitely inspired by that. Like just because it helps the viewer to focus on the subject, right? Some people were like, oh, cool, so you're putting them in front of the cars. And we're like, no, we want to take them away from the cars. We don't want people to know if they're the builder or if they're the owner or if they're part of it, right? Like you see some of the people there and you're like, well, he looks like he could have a car or be the owner, but you might be wrong. He might not be, you know, he might be part of the community, but he might not be the owner of the car.
Yeah.
And I think using that white drop just kind of like helps you focus on the person and not so much on, you know, you don't get distracted from where they are and where they're standing, where they're living and so on and so forth. So definitely helps us to take them out of their environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a really cool approach because like you said at the beginning, like all of those, you know, everyone takes pictures of the cars, everyone takes pictures of what's going on. But to especially isolate those, like the people that are at those events and just capture them for who they are instead of what they're surrounded by is a really, really cool atmosphere that I really enjoy.
Thanks. Say thanks.
Thanks.
Oh my God. All right. So if there was something that you would bring along, you know, to put in your bag, what's your bag missing? So you're going to these events. If you could fit anything in that bag, what are we bringing along? And honestly, you guys might be on top of it and you guys might just be way better photographers than the other people I've had on this podcast in terms of preparedness. But
I mean, I think we're pretty well prepared. Like my camera is full with batteries because the EOS One is just like needs like, I don't know, like 8 batteries or what is it? AA, AAA, whatever. AA batteries. Okay, okay. So I have batteries always with me. We have film with us and we have our lenses. I don't like for that specifically, there's nothing else we need. Like,
gotcha.
There's no need for pepper spray or anything like that. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, honestly.
Yeah, like, absolutely. What, I guess I should have touched on this. What type of film are you guys using?
We shoot exclusively on Tri-X 100.
Tri-X, okay.
Yeah, we tried all the other ones and it doesn't, I've been shooting Tri-X for like 10 years.
Oh, okay.
So I love that film. I love the contrast and the grit that it gives. We tried T-Max, we tried, you know, what else have we tried?
Ilford
and...
Gotcha.
Nothing caught it the way we wanted it to, like, to what we wanted to portray. And Tri-X just... That's the
can I am curious if, because I'm sure you guys have told me how much you shoot at these events, and you guys are, I'm guessing you guys are both shooting individually as well. If you guys are using the same film, can you guys see like a difference between your guys' cameras when you're shooting? Or not really? It's just kind of.
Sometimes with exposure.
Okay.
Like I set my camera up a certain way to just get the,
gotcha.
Like, the look that we're looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, 100%.
And then we tried it with yours and it didn't translate.
And yeah, I was curious because it feels like a very controlled environment, you know, like in terms of same film, same location, same people, white backdrop, you're not changing anything except for the camera. So I was just curious.
It was just like one time that we noticed a difference.
Okay.
But after that, it's just, everything's kind of the same.
In general, it's just kind of all the same. I didn't know, you know, he was talking trash about Nikon, so I wasn't sure if
at all
if there was anything to back it up.
You couldn't tell which
one. He's like, God, I got to look at another Nikon photo. Jesus Christ. All right. Well, when you guys are shooting for yourself, does any of your equipment change? Like, or is it pretty similar to when we're shooting these lowrider events?
For me, it changes depending on what I'm going to shoot.
Okay.
If I'm out shooting portraits, you know, like certain lenses, you know, an 85, 70 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to go out, shoot street, you know, I got like a 50, like prime lenses, like smaller lenses. I'm shooting landscape, you know. So
yeah, absolutely.
So my backpack changes depending on what I'm going to shoot. Do I need a flash? Do I need this?
Of course, yeah.
A wider angle and...
Well, what's your preference, like, to shoot when you're just shooting for yourself?
Honestly, lately, I've just been shooting with a little Copix.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like carrying stuff when I don't have to.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
I mean, once you do it for work, it's like, I'm not going to be carrying this around. So I carry my phone or my little Copix, but nothing bigger than that.
And what style preference would you say when you're shooting for yourself? Like, you mentioned landscape, you mentioned street. Like, what your personal, like,
now preference? It's whatever catches my eye if I'm out. Like, some cold light, you know, something going on in the street, something, you know, car or tree or whatever that catches my eye. Like,
yeah.
I'll take a photo of it.
Yeah.
There's nothing in particular. Yeah, I think pictures of trees. Yeah.
It's a nice tree.
Yeah. There's some nice trees out there.
It's just like, yeah, it's just a good tree, you know? All right, yeah, same thing to you. Like when you're shooting, I guess you can start with what you prefer to shoot yourself.
It really depends. Like for me, it's a bit different because like I don't go and shoot.
Yeah.
I rarely just go randomly and shoot stuff. Like I need a project to do something. If I don't have a project, I'm not going to take my camera out.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, I like to take photos, but I need to figure for myself, like, what is a nice project? Like, it could be like, okay, I'm going to go to the beach and just going to, you know, shoot people at the beach or just waves. I love the texture of the waves. So I need to have a project where I'm like, I'm going to go and take photos of the waves and give it like a nice contrast.
Gotcha.
So the trees,
if you find a good tree, yeah.
I'm just gonna do trees now. It's a new project. So depending on that, it changes. Like I did one project. It was called Every Waking Hour,
mm-hmm.
where I took my camera with me, and I just from the morning when I woke up, I took a photo every hour for an entire year. So on that one, I shot with the Mark IV and just a 50 millimeter mm-hmm. because it was kind of like the easiest. I don't have to change anything. It's not too heavy as a camera. The Leica, in comparison, is much heavier camera.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this one is actually pretty easy because if I'm going to walk around with a camera all day, I'm going to use that.
Mm-hmm.
For kind of like street photography, I'll try to use the Leica.
Okay.
Just because it's kind of like it's one of those that doesn't have the red dot. So it's kind of like people don't really pay that much attention to the camera.
Yeah.
And depending on where you are, in what country, you know, people might just not recognize it, which is really helpful.
Yeah.
And then lens for that one, it's a 35. And then also depending on the project, I have an old lens from, I think, 1936 or something like
that.
Shit. Like one of the old ones with a mount.
Yeah.
So I use that one just randomly to give it like a different look.
Yeah, that one's just a fun one.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's it.
Wow. Okay. That's wild. Do you have a dream camera? Either one of you?
Phase one?
For sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you could hear we're all in unison here. We're all in it together.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Just give me $50,000 and
yeah, easy.
Well, depends. Yeah.
Maybe we're gonna get the
drink. Yeah, you know, you can go for it. You can go. Yeah. You can do anything you want.
Yeah.
It's a dream. We have unlimited budget here.
Yeah, we can dream. That's for sure.
All right. If you kind of pivot off of that one, if you had to shoot with one camera for the rest of your life, what would it be? Kind of talking about what you were saying with carrying around even.
I think right now I would go with the Leica M11 monochrome.
Okay.
That would be the one that I would just
kind of capture everything, of like... Absolutely.
Because it's super quiet. It's kind of like it's not too heavy. It's lighter than the one that I have, and the quality is just it's amazing. It's really good quality, and the grays has so many different layers. He always gives me shit because but yeah, it's because the gray and the tones and everything captured it so well, and kind of like has way more information than if you use digital and make it black and white. So that's why. So yeah.
Gotcha.
And for me, I'd probably go for like an M6.
M6?
The 35 and then
Screws. Call it good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any particular reason?
Simple.
Simple. Yeah. Just classic.
I don't need that much.
Captures everything.
Exactly.
For sure. Absolutely. I'm really interested in this next question. Strictly because most of the work that I've seen of you guys is there's no location to it. You know, like, you know, your guys' stuff has no backdrop. You know, it's all the person that's getting their picture taken. So in regards to like where you take pictures, like in LA or California or anything like that, are there specific places that you would love to take pictures at in regards to, it could be an event, it could be anything that like is just kind of where you would love to capture, whether that's, like I said, like another lowriders event or just like a location where you're just shooting street?
Well, as far as like for lowriders, like we do want to go to like Asia and shoot lowriders in Asia, Japan, stuff like that. Yeah, that would be crazy.
I think it'd be really interesting to shoot the same event, but in different countries. Like if I don't know if that's exactly what you're saying, but...
No, just shoot their, like, because they have their whole scene out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, kind of capturing their version of it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it would still be the white backdrop.
Yeah.
Everything. But, obviously, we'd get some behind the scenes and stuff.
Of course.
And just document how different it is compared to what it is here. Yeah, that would be, like, the thing, right?
Yeah. But that was for the lowriders. Do you have any... Any other dream location?
Either way.
No? You don't care.
Well,
for lowriders, yes, I agree. Like traveling the world and capture the different people from the different, you know, communities all over the world, from Japan, Thailand. There's lowrider communities in Europe. I'm sure there's some, you know, weird ones in Mexico. So that would be amazing to kind of like travel all over the place and capture those. Personally, I would love to go, you know, kind of like towards like Tibet, Mongolia, all of that area.
Oh, interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
I like to go, or like I personally wouldn't mind going to North Korea because I am fascinated by places that not a lot of people can go.
Yeah.
So yeah, North Korea would be very interesting.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. China. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be interesting to shoot in a place where they're not very friendly towards people shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
definitely North Korea. You definitely have a bit of trouble to take photos in North Korea. That's for sure.
Do you think North Korea has like a lowrider culture at all?
Yeah. They don't even have cars, man. There's like a lowrider bike scene.
I would be so curious to see what that would even look like. Like, you know, even in like certain parts of the world, it's like, is there a lowrider culture in Mongolia? Or, you know, like, you know, if you go to Japan or something like that, like, or Mexico or whatever we're talking about, yeah, absolutely there is. But it's like, there are certain aspects. Is there a, Is there a Russian lowrider culture? Because
there's always one crazy person that does it.
Oh, 100%.
There's always that one guy or one girl that, like, right, I'm going to make a lowrider.
There has to
they
be.
They just go through with it.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like this is a good, I feel like we've been talking around the topic for a long time, but I would love to talk more about, like, just like the lowrider events in general, just for people that aren't, we've been throwing it around a lot, and I feel like it could help with some clarification. And we can even talk about the, is this an event you guys are putting on specifically, or just that you're shooting the low riders in general? If you guys want to talk more about that.
Yeah. So that event on May 11th is our event where we're going to show some of the photography that we took, of the portraits. It's going to be at Optimus Studio, which is a really big studio, and they kind of like gave us the space for free so we can use it.
Oh, wow.
So we're showing the photos. Okay. We're going to have a few cars. We're going to have food. And so it's kind of like not the usual photo exhibition.
It's
kind of like more like a event, and it's a blend of like community event. It's a blend of, there's going to be food. There's going to be, you know, taco truck. There's going to be a guy, you know, if we all get it, like a guy giving, you know, doing tattoos.
Yeah.
And we're going to sell some of our merch and some of the photos. There's going to be, you know, the prints are going to be there. So that is the event that is going to happen May 11th. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And, you know, hopefully some of the car clubs that we took photos of are going to come. So it could be an interesting kind of like mix of people. You know, we're going to kind of like trying to bring in photographers and art producers and art galleries and, you know, people who just like photography, and mm-hmm. then at the same time bring in the people we took photos of. So
gotcha.
It could be a really interesting blend of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so yeah, we're looking forward to that.
Just kind of mixing like everyone that has kind of had a hand in everything, whether it's the subjects or the people that are also like kind of inspirations. I did realize that I have a general idea of like lowrider culture, but if you guys want to talk more about it, because you guys are obviously more familiar, like it's based around like car customization, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Is that kind of the extent of it, or any additional information just for people that aren't as familiar with like the culture of it? I would love to hear more about it.
I mean, the cars are, yeah, they're the main thing, but it's like the surface of it.
Of course, yeah.
And just from car club to car club, they're all very different.
Mm-hmm.
And they all, in a way, specialize on a certain type of car.
Gotcha.
Like the Genocide people that we're going to bring, they're like a 70s, like disco car club type of thing.
Okay.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But they have,
that's
like,
new to me. Yeah,
they have 100%. Their own very specific niche of how they like paint their cars and like how they build their cars. As opposed to like the classic, like from the 1920s, like the bombers.
Yeah.
Those are all very different as well. How they build it, so like even the cars are very, have their own, like, you know,
yeah,
layer to it. And then as far as community, like the community is very different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You get people that have classic cars that are, you know, kind of like older.
Yeah.
Like more well off. And then, you know, have people that, you know, just do regular low riding. People that do like the hoppers, the cars that jump.
Okay, gotcha, yeah.
So those cars can't even drive on the street.
Gotcha.
They have to tow them in.
Oh, interesting.
They're not street legal.
Interesting.
So they can drive on the street.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They tow these cars in. And there's people that just tow their cars in because they don't want to drive them.
Yeah.
They don't want to break them. There's people that don't care. They're just like, oh, I built this car. I'm going to drive it wherever.
Yeah.
Wherever we go, I'm going to take it. It goes in deep.
Yeah, I believe it. It feels like there's a lot, and like a lot of it is just, it feels like it would be hard to talk about just because so much of it is like culture and environment based.
Yeah.
So
that's, and even for us, like we're only like getting like 2% of it.
Yeah.
What we've learned is just from like people that have, like we take their photo and they kind of like stick around and like talk to us and tell us a little bit of what they do.
Gotcha.
But everyone we talk to has like a different story, a different side of it, and they play a different part in that, you know, community. And it's It's crazy. It's a lot.
Yeah. Was this a community that both of you guys were kind of involved with already, or is this something that you admired from the outside and kind of tried to, you wanted to capture, you wanted to get involved with eventually?
For me, like, I grew up in LA.
Okay.
So it's always something that's always been around. Like, I always like looking at them like from a distance. I never really would attend the, I guess, the car meetups.
Yeah.
More recently, I started attending them with like other friends and, you know, checking it out. And then obviously we started doing the project and dove a little bit deeper than, you know, like the surface of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, just I've always seen them and been around them. And
gotcha.
It's not that new to me.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
To me, is I always loved cars, but you don't see this that much in, you know, I lived in Europe.
Okay.
And you don't see that as much. Like, you might see one or two driving around. You're like, holy shit, look at that.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
But it's like, it's a spectacle.
Yeah. But you don't see it as much. So I was always interested in just kind of like the culture and the subculture of it, because mm-hmm. it's kind of like its own really interesting subculture. And kind of like understanding, you know, why they're doing it and where he came from and how it started and all of that stuff. It was just kind of like a certain understanding for me. But then now, like Danny said, like now talking to them and understanding even more and seeing that there's actually, you know, kind of like a nice familiar culture underneath. They know each other, respect each other. And then at the same time, you know, like there's people who don't like the other car club because they're like, oh, they're one car club is purists and the other one is not purists. And they just, they mix and match things, or they have a modern stereo inside and they're mm-hmm. like, well,
it's not true to its form or whatever.
It's not true to its original.
It's like any group of hobbyists or something like that. There are people that are like, you can only do this, and then everyone is like, why would we stick with, like, you know, antiquated standards? Like, yeah,
exactly. 100%, so that is nice. It's nice to see. It's nice to go, and it's nice to, you know, see the different cars, see the different builds, and see the different people. And you know, the variety of people that you have is really interesting too, because you have families and then you have these guys who just do them themselves, and you have people who just do it on the weekends, and you have other people who's like, this is their entire hobby. That's where they put all of their money in, right? Like, for years they've been building on one car and they keep building on it and building on it and building on it. And there's like hundreds of thousands of dollars that they put into those cars. And it gives you a different, at least it gave me a different understanding and a different appreciation.
Yeah.
For you know, the little hobby, as we, you know, you look at it and it's like, oh, look, it's crazy people with their whatever cars jumping around. But then when you get into it and you talk to them and you understand it, you're like, holy shit, yeah, this is bigger. This is a bigger thing than I would have, you know, thought of.
Yeah, this is your life. Yeah. You know, like, this is, yeah, it's so interesting when you meet someone whose entire life is based around something that you've never even thought about.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. I love, you know, the more that you guys talk about this, the more entranced I am kind of with the culture of it, and capturing the people that are behind this entire culture and that are behind this entire, like, kind of dynamic that is, you know, like you said, you grew up in LA and you see it everywhere. It's in our backyard. And we've all seen those cars, and we, you know, we get dusted by them, you know, and then we're like, oh yeah, and we have that reaction that's like, oh shit, that's crazy, but like, that's all we know. And then there's this entire subculture and like environment around it where it's like, it's people's lives, and it's just like everything that they pour into, and it's really fascinating.
And it's big, right? Like, it's big. Like, it's huge in LA. There's in, you know, every major city in America has some sort of like lowrider culture, lowrider clubs, like from Vegas to, you know, Texas, you know, like, definitely some of those kind of like southern states have a huge you know, kind of like fan base and also community that keeps this kind of like lowrider thing alive. And I mean, they're in museums now, you know. Mm-hmm. there's one that's going to be in the Peterson Museum, and there's another one who's, I think, like in the some historic whatever museum. So they're really kind of like seen more now, and starting to being more and more part of like a bigger thing and a bigger culture and a bigger movement,
and seen as the works of art that they are. You know, like you said, people are pouring years of time and effort and money into these, and they're like creating them to like be a reflection of what they enjoy and their passion and stuff like that.
And a lot of them were like hand painted.
Yeah.
Which is the craziest thing. Like there's one guy that just hand paints these cars and it just looks ridiculous.
That's nuts.
Yeah. It's commitment. It's dedication.
Is it, you said when you say there's like one guy, is it like one guy is kind of like the like icon that does everyone's, or like, there's one guy that you're specifically thinking of?
No, they're just like one guy that they hire to like,
yeah,
they paint with the brush, you know, like the pinstripes and all that stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, they're so intricate. And it's like, I work on my car, but there's such a difference in my, like, there's such a difference between me being like, okay, I know parts of my car and like I can repair parts of it. And then them being like, no, every single piece of my car was like handpicked. Like I did research on this. It is for like I picked this for a reason. And like that's how the entire car is. And it's so wild.
We've seen them fix the cars on the street. Like the wheel falls off.
Yeah.
They'll put it back on the spot.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No, I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the one thing, I went to another event. It was the Lowriders Long Beach, Lowriders magazine. And they had some, you know, they have like, you win whatever best of show, win whatever, whatever. I went to look at some of those cars, and they're just like, every little detail on that car is individually made for that car. So it fits the entire theme that the car has. Like,
yeah.
Like you open the, like you could see into the engine, and parts were kind of like chrome cutouts made with CNC machines and whatever the fuck. Like the springs of the car are in like a special color because it's whatever, gold plated and so on and so forth. So everything is kind of like individually made and. Yeah, it's one of a kind.
Truly one of a kind. Yeah,
truly. Yeah, because like even like the screws, like they can go as deep as they want, right? Yeah. Like you can really look at each screw and be like, okay, I don't like this screw. I'm gonna make a better screw. I'm gonna change the color of the screw or whatever.
Yeah,
and it's very interesting to just go and see those cars and then talk to the people and you know, interact with them. And sometimes they're just like normal, whatever. I'm like, oh, like he's not even like a mechanic. He's like, oh, I just work at whatever. Yeah. It's like, I do this and that. And it's like, oh, okay.
That leads us back to exactly what you guys were talking about at the beginning, is like everyone takes pictures of these cars. Everyone takes pictures of these events. How can we look at this in a different way and see the people that are putting this time and effort and energy and passion into these cars and celebrate them? You can correct me if I'm wrong, but like celebrate them in like their own form and show everyone like these are like the creative people behind this. These are the people that are carrying this culture.
Yeah. Well, and it's them, it's their families, it's their children, and it's the entire community around it that kind of like supports them and supports each other.
100%.
And I think that is what we hope captured.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we did. I mean, we could have gone to way more events and taken way more photos for sure. But I think, I mean, it's impossible to go to all of them.
Yeah.
There's too many.
Is this something that you guys see yourselves trying to capture over like a longer period of time, or was this kind of like a temporary project that is kind of culminating in this event that we were talking about?
I think we would like to capture more over a longer period of time. You know, like we were talking about the Thailand thing and and also like right now this is just a little part of LA. Like we could go and get 100% way more of LA. We could also go to Oakland. We could go Vegas. There's a community in Vegas. There's a community in Texas, in Houston, Dallas, and so forth. So it's definitely a project that could just keep going and going and going. So I think that's the idea, to just keep going and capture as much as possible. And hopefully one day to have, you know, different books where it's like Los Lowriders, L.A., Los Lowriders, Oakland, Los Lowriders, Houston, Los Lowriders, whatever. So that way you can kind of like go through the books and see the different people, the different characters, and you know, if you have Los Lowriders Thailand, that would be fucking amazing. Just,
yeah.
You know, the people, their faces, how they look, how they react, how they interact and all that stuff. It's just, it's, there's certain similarities, but I'm sure there's also going to be certain things that are going to be completely different.
For sure. Beautiful. Yeah. No, I could absolutely talk about this all day, but I would love to get back into more kind of like you guys as photographers. And cause that is the goal of this. I would love to know like what like the beginning of photography was for you, whether it was just you deciding to pick up a camera or if you had a family member that kind of inspired you and introduced you to photography or what the first camera you used, like any of that, like how you kind of got into it, how you developed, and if you have any story about, you know, somebody that was like, let me show you the way, you know, but it doesn't have to be that dramatic.
My first brush with like photography was like in high school.
Okay.
And they gave it to me, I think, as an elective.
A classic, yeah.
Hated it. I transferred out. I was in music. I was really into music back then.
Okay, okay.
So I just transferred out of that into like a music class.
You were like, no, none of this.
Yeah, I'm not doing this. Yeah. Like, I was boring and I was like, yeah. And then in college, this girl got me to sign up for a photo class.
Okay.
And, you know, I bought camera and whatever.
Yeah.
I hated the teacher. I hated, like, I didn't hate photography.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like my thing.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, did the class, did not like the teacher again.
Uh-huh.
After that, I kind of put the camera away.
Do you mind me asking what type of camera it was? Do
you remember? It was like a little Nikon.
Okay.
I've been shooting Nikon since
the
beginning. I kind of put it away. I just, you know, ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Did my thing. And then I remember I had the camera and I was like, well, I paid all this money for it. I'm going to use it.
Yeah,
I bought like a little 50 millimeter lens for it. And like, I'm going to take it to parties and just take some crazy photos at parties or whatever.
Yeah.
And I used to DJ back then. So I was like, okay. So I kind of started with that. I started taking photos. And then someone asked me, oh, you take photos of me, whatever. I took some shitty photos of this person.
Uh-huh.
And then just like slowly, I just started like every day, they would carry it and like take photos here and there. And it kind of just like snowballed to, you know.
Yeah.
Like now.
Yeah. The more people that I talk to, the more that it feels like there's like an exponential curve in like camera use, whereas like for a long time it's just real, real low. You have the camera and then it just kind of grows very, very slowly, and then you just like hit a point, and then after that it just like skyrockets. Where, yeah, you're like,
I don't even know when that happened.
Yeah, no, me either. Yeah, the same thing happened for me. It's just like one day and you're like, oh, I'm a photographer now. I don't even know when that happened. But yeah, sure, I can do that. And I feel like it's just a rite of passage that you can look back on some shitty pictures that you took for somebody one time.
Oh, I remember that. It was really bad.
100%. And like, you're like, I remember like thinking in the moment, because I have the same example, where it's like in the moment I was like, I'm crushing it right now. Like, these are is literally just like on automatic, and I'm just like pointing and shooting, like not thinking about anything. And I'm like,
I knew at the time.
You were like taking them, like, oh, these are pieces of shit.
Real time. I knew, like, these are horrible. Like,
do you remember?
I have zero idea what I'm doing. Like, I mean, that girl didn't know any better. You're like, Jesus.
Yeah, you know, 100%. Like, yeah, exactly. That's the thing, is that like the person that you're taking them for obviously has no idea either, or else they wouldn't have asked you.
Exactly.
They just see that you have a camera and they're like, oh, can you do this event or whatever? And you're like, oh, sure. You
can take photo there.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I can take photos.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was for?
It was just like for fun.
Like, oh, like just like, just yeah, come take pictures of
it. It wasn't anything like serious.
Okay. Okay.
It was just like, oh, can you take photos of me at the park or whatever? And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Let's do it. But I knew it was going to be bad.
I remember when I first was kind of getting into it, a girl I was dating, she asked me if somebody close to her was getting married. And she asked me if I could take pictures at the reception Not like wedding forward. It was just like the little like family like get together before. Because if it was like anything wedding, no. But but I remember she was like, can you just like take pictures at this dinner? And I was like, for sure. And it's in the darkest restaurant I have ever been in. Like so dark. I don't have any sort of flash. Except for the like built-in one. And so I am just firing off in the middle of this restaurant, and they are the worst pictures I think I've ever taken in my entire life. But I remember taking them and just being like, I'm crushing it right now. Yeah. They should pay me for this. And then looking back, I'm pretty sure they're still in my hard drive somewhere. But like, they are the worst photos that you could ever ask for. No, like, okay. Yeah, 100%. What about you? What was it?
I think when my grandmother died, she kind of like, she was like, oh, here's your inheritance. Like a little, it was a lot of money, but it was a little, some money. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, what should I do with this? And I was like, oh, I'm just going to buy a nice camera. So I bought, I think, the Canon 50 or something like okay. that. Not digital, definitely still back in days film. Then I bought that one. I was like, oh, I'm going to go and fucking shoot the shit out of everything, whatever. I had no fucking idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
Like, no clue. I was just walking around and, you know, like, move the fucking thing to pee. And then I was just like, all right, shooting whatever the fuck I could.
Yeah.
And then nothing was good. And then I think at some point my mom, she was like, oh, we're going to... She used to paint a lot. And she was like, oh, I'm gonna have, you know, have someone take photos of my paintings and then, you know, nicely scan them in and have like a portfolio and have like a book and stuff like that.
Gotcha, yeah.
And I was like, oh, fuck that. I can do that. Yeah, that was not a good idea. All of the photos turned out, you know, horribly wrong and bad and whatever. And
yeah.
Then the guy came at some point, I think like, you know, 2-3 weeks later to actually take the photos, and he came with lights and stuff and lighting them up properly so there's not too much, you know, shadows and blah, blah, blah. I was like, ah, okay.
Oh, that's how it's done.
That's how it's done. Okay. Yeah. So that was interesting to understand. And then after that, like, I just started to play more and more with cameras and mm-hmm. play more and more with, you know, like, with the camera that I had and just shoot more things. And yeah, and then when I bought the Leica, that's when I went on the round the world trip. And that's when I was like, all right, I'm going to take photos. Like, I specifically bought that camera because I was going to do that trip.
Yeah.
And since then I'm like, all right, I'll just shoot everything I can. If it's, you know, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Like a treat.
like an interesting, you know, project. Like, the trees, like trees.
Like trees, like trees.
Yeah, we need to look more trees. We need more trees, people. Green trees, yellow trees.
Dead trees.
Joshua trees. They look like dead, but they're alive.
Yeah.
It's two in one.
It is always interesting. You reminded me. It is always interesting when you see like a professional do a project that you've done before, but it's like the first time that you've seen it done right. You go, oh, that would have made it a lot easier. Oh, yeah, I should probably do that. Yeah, like I remember the first time I saw somebody like take pictures for, they were shooting this like coffee shop for a magazine. And I was like, it ain't be that hard to like light something like that. Comes in with like the biggest like flash setup I've ever seen. He's got like 10-foot poles that he's like putting lights up outside and like lighting it in through the windows, and it's like a full like gaffer setup.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my like,
I can do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I need about
a tripod.
Yeah, exactly. Give me a tripod and some flashlights, and we'll be good.
Yeah, to that I was working in Germany as an art director in, you know, mostly for Volkswagen, doing kind of like going to the photo shoots.
Yeah.
And then the first time I went to a photo shoot, we went to like this photographer, and he just comes, you know, professional.
Yeah.
You come as a photographer, you bring all of your equipment, you bring whatever fucking thing, I don't know how many tripods and your assistant and lights and a truck full of whatever thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ah, okay. So that's how it goes. Okay. So yeah. I have no idea what I've been doing.
Yeah, 100%.
So that was a interesting introduction to kind of like this world of, you know, professional advertising photography. Yeah. Where it's like, it's you know, the photographer, like a good photographer, sometimes like 5,000 a day. I'm like, why? Why? And then you look at the shit and you're like, ah, that's why.
Oh, that's why. That's yeah. why. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I get it now. You're like, oh, you're charging, then you're still probably paying stuff off. So I get it. I get it. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It is crazy comparing yourself to like other people and you're like trying to do the same thing. You're like, we got some experiences in the way. Like we still got to do some experiences. Then I also need about $50,000 more dollars worth of equipment. Yeah, exactly. And then we'll be good. But, yeah. One thing that I would love to talk about with you guys, like kind of like wrapping up, is just like your, interaction with social media specifically, in regards to like photography and what that, has to do with, whether, you know, your event or something that you're continuing to do with like Instagram or something like that. Would you say that like you use Instagram as like your a portfolio, just you try to keep it strictly personal? Like it is something that is like hard for photographers. That's like it's a photo based like social media. And so I think for photographers, it kind of becomes that like harder thing to kind of navigate. And I enjoy hearing people's perspectives on it and how they use it and if it's something that they see as a tool or a hindrance or anything like that.
I've made my peace with Instagram.
Yeah. How so?
I've been on it since, you know, pretty much day one. So I've been, you know, I'm old school with Instagram.
Yeah.
I work in social media now.
Oh, okay.
So at the end of the day, it's like, you know what? It is what it is.
Yeah.
They're going to do whatever they're going to do. You know, if I post like whatever I post, it's going to do good. It's going to do bad.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I'm posting it to post it instead of for what other people want.
It's not like, oh, I need this to do good. I need that to do good. Even when you like collaborate for work and stuff like that with brands, it's like, you know what? You're probably not going to get the best, but you know, the work is good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not our fault. It's, you know, it's Instagram's fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it all depends like on your take on it. For me, I post like a lot of LA stuff. If I post anything that's not LA, it's not gonna do anything. It's not gonna go anywhere. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
I think if people make their peace with it, they're gonna be a little bit less stressed.
For sure. End
of the day.
For sure.
Some people do kind of like depend on it. And they understand that they have to, like, you know, push it.
Yeah.
I did that for a little bit. I pushed it for, like, a year. It was, like, you know, every day, post every day. But it was, like, a goal I said. Like, I'm going to do this for a year.
You posted every day?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then...
Like, just, like, still photos?
Yeah, photos and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
But now it's, like, a lot of my stuff is, like, recycled. I don't have time to shoot as much as I used to.
Yeah.
So, like, I post the same photo, like, every 3 months, you know, like... Post it now and 3 months probably gonna see it again.
Yeah.
And that works for me. You know,
yeah.
It's not that serious anymore.
Yeah.
I see the other end of it, you know, like working in it. And it's like
you do have a bit of a unique perspective on the ability to kind of see like the broader spectrum as a user and then also kind of on the, I guess, professional side.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the like the logistical side of the business that is social media.
So now like I run social media, but I've worked for campaigns that need photos for social media. Yeah. So like you kind of like end up falling into that.
Yeah.
So you have to create the stuff that's going to perform well.
Yeah.
Like, for Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, whatever that means.
But then, you know, you post your work, it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to do this. And it's like, so you kind of see both ends.
Yeah.
And you make your peace with it. I think the sooner people make peace with it, it's going to be.
What would you say when you say make your peace, what do you like specifically mean? Just like what's going to happen is going to happen no matter what.
And then
you post and let go.
Yeah, that's it. You don't look at it.
Fair enough. If it doesn't get engagement, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's just, yeah. Just post it and what happens, happens. It's there as a documentation.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
But I do use it like as a portfolio and you know, people see what I do. And other than that,
nothing too much. Yeah. Eddie, what about you?
So my Instagram has no theme. It's just all over the place, from photos that I like film, digital, from the speed project I went to take some photos. I went to, I don't know, like at the beach. So I just go like all over the place and I just post it. That's it. I don't care. I'm like him. Like, I don't give a shit, honestly. Like,
yeah.
I started for a while. I was like, oh, I need to get more followers, blah, blah. And then I was like, well, what for?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like that. Like, I'm not going to make money with it because I also don't want to make money with it.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like, I just post stuff. People like it. If people like the photo, I'll send them the photo. That's pretty much it. Yeah,
no, it's I genuinely think that that's a very healthy perspective to have, to just kind of be like, yeah, I put it here because I want it here. And that's kind of end of day. Like, that's what's,
yeah,
that's what it's there for.
And then it's, you know, the rest of Instagram is just memes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the other side of it is you can be like, I'm just going to follow what I want to see. Yeah, instead of the like political side of things where it's like, I'll follow you if you follow me.
And so it's nice from time to time if you take a photo and you have like a photographer that you follow and he starts following you and he's like, oh, this is a cool photo. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it. Like, that's the only time where I really kind of like pay attention to it. Like, of course, I reply to, you know, when people say like, oh, this is a nice photo or this is cool, I reply to them. And some of them, you know, like from the project that I did, like some of them are runners and some of them are crew members and whatever, and they want to have a photo. I'm like, sure, like I took the photo, I'll send you the photo. That's no problem. But that's the most of the interaction that I have with it. There's for me, I tried. I was like, it's boring. It's too much work. No one cares.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. if you try, it does knock you down pretty fast. Yeah. But my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my new project. I'm going to become an influencer.
Yeah. Kind of like last question for you guys. Like, would you say that you have anybody that inspires you? Like in terms of like your work and stuff like that, people that you look up to that you like their stuff and you kind of, I guess inspires you is just like a overarching term for that.
To me, like for... a good friend of mine, Simon Pushman. Props to Simon. Shout out. Shout out. But he always, because he's like known as a car photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's a very, very good car photographer, but he's a very good photographer by itself.
Yeah.
He does a lot of very interesting projects and he always keeps pushing. He keeps pushing what he does. He keeps trying to come up with new concepts. He keeps trying to come up with like new perspectives. His personal work is always different. It's always fun. It's always trying to push things further. And it's unexpected. So that's one of the ones that I'm like, oh, this is awesome. I follow him. I love his work and I love like the way he shoots things and the way he pushes himself to really get, you know, out of his comfort zone and try new things. So that to me, like from kind of like the newer photographers, it's him. Another good friend of mine, Olaf Heine, he's been taking portraits of people for a very long time. He kind of like became famous for the portraits he took from Iggy Pop and, you know, like famous people, but he did, and he just finished that one. It's a really good book about Hawaii. It's a photo book about Hawaii. So he did one for Brazil. Now he did one for Hawaii. And it's just fantastic. Just the work and how he approaches people, how he talks to people. Like it's very different than from what Simon does, but it's kind of like the same mentality to kind of like push further and try new things out. And like, he was like looking, I think, for like, he loves Hawaii. And he's like, oh, maybe I can do a book. So he went into research and apparently there's no book about Hawaii, like photo book.
Interesting.
And he's like, well, I'm just going to go and do one. And then he went and did one. And then he went and, you know, swam with sharks. And he did all of that stuff just to capture the perfect photo.
Yeah, wow.
And that is very inspiring, you know. Yeah. Like the lengths that he goes to capture the perfect photo is beautiful. Yeah.
Some of the most inspiring people in my life are the people that are like, oh, this isn't a thing. Okay, I'll just do it. Like, it's great. Like, the people that have that mentality are truly some of the most insane people in my life. Because every time that you ask them what they're up to, it's a completely different thing, because they just found something that they want to do, and they're like, oh, nobody's done this. Okay, I'll just take care of it.
Yeah, it's like Simon loves beer, and now his son started or became a brewer in Germany, and now Simon's like, oh, I'm just going to do my own beer. So now Simon is doing beer. So that's kind of like, you know,
yeah,
what you were just saying, like, yeah, he always does something different, and it's like a different photo project. And if it's not a different photo project, it's like, well, I'm going to make beers now with my son, and then we're gonna get it out the door. And it's all based, like, the beer is funny because it's all based on photography and film. So the beer is called It's a Wrap. And then you can get, like, the one of the beers is like the runner. The beer is like the phase one. Another beer is going to have a different name. So it's all like the apple box is going to be maybe like a cider.
Yeah.
So it's all kind of like the names of the beers are all based in film and photography, and the beer is called It's a Wrap.
That's fun.
So yeah, that's a fun thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right? He's like, oh yeah, just I like beer. My son does beer. Let's make beer.
Yeah, let's just do it. Yeah, it's just second nature to them. They're just like, yeah, okay, yeah, we'll just do that now.
Yeah.
Oh, there are hurdles? Okay, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is crazy.
Yeah, that's nuts. What about you? Where's your inspiration come from?
Inspiration. Like, personally, for me, just, like, personal work. It's just you know, getting out and exploring the world, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
On a more professional end, lately, it's been live editors.
Okay.
These guys are fucking crazy. I did I don't even heard of Summit. Summit at Sea. It's, like, this cruise for, like, entrepreneurs and stuff like that.
I don't think so, no.
And I was part of, like, the social media production team.
Oh, okay.
And we were turning around, like, shooting events and turning around same day photo. And that was a bitch for photo team.
Yeah.
But the video team, their editor, just sat in a room and cranked out these crazy edits, you know, VFX, you know, the whole thing, coloring, grading, you know, cutting, everything, turning around two reels, like, a day. And I just found the whole thing, damn, these guys are ridiculous. People that just, like, live edit for events, just, like, sit there and edit. That's,
yeah.
I got a little taste of it. And I was like, yeah, this is.
Yeah, really the only context that I have for that is, like, watching sports.
Yeah.
Because, you know, something will happen in a play, and, like, 3 minutes later, they'll have a slow-mo compilation of, like, all the, like, biggest things that happened in the last, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 people.
Yeah, exactly.
Sitting in the room.
All just, like, they're like, all right, that was clippable. Let's go. Like,
and they just crank them.
It's crazy to me. Like, it's one of those things that, like, growing up, you see it all the time.
Yeah.
And then you're like, and then you start working in photo video, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yep.
Like, that's crazy.
This is how they do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm running on 2 hours of sleep.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Crazy.
Goodness. Yeah. That's, I hadn't thought about it for, like, live events and stuff like that, but.
Oh, it was definitely something very new to me, and much respect to those people that, you know, sit there and live edit and crank out all the sports people that crank out all this stuff. It's red carpet, you know, all this stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, that is nuts.
The ability to just, like, go through all this raw footage and select the banners
so quickly
and put them together, and, you know, is it need the effects, is it need this, is it need that, transitions, all this, and then just, like, make it work.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, have you seen the TikToks of like the speed editors, where they're essentially like speed running, like, Premiere?
Okay.
And they're, like, trying to, like, edit this video, like, as fast as possible, and they do this, like, insane. It's obviously something that they've practiced.
Yeah.
But they're, like, going through and editing this, like, 4-minute clip in, like, 38 seconds. where they're like adding transitions, adding like color grading, like that. But it's something they've gone over and over time again.
It's a sport.
It's like speed running, like Mario Kart or something like that. Yeah, but instead, it's this 4 minute like interview, and you're like, okay, I don't know what that kind of shows you the side of TikTok that I'm on. when those are the videos that they're like, he's gonna love this bad boy right here. But yeah, no, it's nuts. And like those people, it's so wild to see people that talented and that like proficient in their like expertise, and then
kind of, how good it comes out at the end.
Yeah,
like,
exactly,
this is really good. Like, you would never be able to know that this guy just sat there and
it's yeah, exactly, yeah, 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 they're getting it cranked out in you know, a couple hours, and I'm like, that'd take me a couple of days.
Yeah,
at the least. Yeah, and it would be lower quality, but yeah, it really is like inspiring. But yeah, is there anybody else that you wanted to include, or is that you don't have to. I just wanted to make sure that you had really another chance.
That's about it.
Perfect. Yeah. That's kind of it. Thank you guys so much. If you want to recap the event really fast, just so that people...
Yeah, it's at Optimist Studios, May 11th, from 3 to 9. The website is Los Minus. What is it called?
Dash?
Yeah, there. Los-lowriders.com. You can go on the website. There's the event. There's the Instagram as well. Instagram is just Los Lowriders. You can check it out. You should RSVP.
Okay.
It's free, but, you know, RSVP just so we have account and all that stuff. And I think that's it. Yeah.
I know we kind of talked about it earlier. Do either of you guys want to plug your Instagram, or like don't really care?
I don't care.
If you find plug yours,
you'll find us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys coming in and talking through like kind of your journey, and then also just your projects, because such a fascinating different world that, you know, creativity and artistry. And I really admire how you guys are kind of putting that all together and kind of combining the two worlds in a way that, you know, it takes people like you to like kind of bridge those gaps in both directions, you know, pulling the photographers and pulling like that side of the creative community into like the low riding world and introducing that, and then vice versa. And it's so fun, like meeting the people that are that bridge.
Okay,
yeah, and you know what I mean, like, you know, because like, you know, I take pictures, and then like I enjoy comedy, and a lot of people like don't kind of have that connection, and I get the opportunity to pull other people into that world, and so I love meeting other people that are doing the same thing. But yeah, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, of course.
Bye, Eddie.